Nothing did stop it, and that is why Netscape played another hugely important flattening role. It helped make the internet truly interoperable. In the years before the internet became commercial, explained Andreessen, scientists developed a series of open protocols meant to make everyone's email system or university computer network connect seamlessly with everyone else's to ensure that no one had some special advantage. These mathematical-based protocols, which enabled digital devices to talk to each other, were like magical pipes that, once you adopted them for your network, made you compatible with everyone else, no matter what kind of computer they were running. These protocols were, and still are, known by their alphabet soup names, mainly FTP, HTTP, SSL, SMTP, POP, and TCP/IP. Together, they form a system for transporting data around the internet in a relatively secure manner, no matter what network your company or household has, or what computer or cell phone or handheld device you are using. As browsing and the internet in general grew, Netscape wanted to make sure that Microsoft, with its huge market dominance, would not be able to shift these web protocols from open to proprietary standards that only Microsoft servers would be able to handle. Netscape began pushing these open standards through the sale of its browsers, and the public responded enthusiastically. Sun started to do the same with its servers, and Microsoft started to do the same with Windows 95, considering browsing so critical that it famously built its own browser directly into Windows with the addition of Internet Explorer. Each realized that the public, which suddenly could not get enough of email and browsing, wanted the internet companies to work together and create one interoperable network. They wanted companies to compete with each other over different applications, that is, over what consumers could do once they were on the internet, not over how they got on the internet in the first place. As a result, after quite a few format wars among the big companies, by the late 1990s, the internet computing platform became seamlessly integrated. This integration was a huge flattener because it enabled so many more people to get connected with so many more other people. In the summer of 1995, Barksdale and his Netscape colleagues went on an old-fashioned roadshow with their investment bankers from Morgan Stanley to try to entice investors around the country to buy Netscape stock once it went public. "When we went out on the road," said Barksdale, "Morgan Stanley said the stock could sell for as high as $14, but after the roadshow got going, they were getting such demand for the stock, they decided to double the opening price to $28. The last afternoon before the offering, we were all in Maryland. It was our last stop. We had this caravan of black limousines. We looked like some kind of mafia group. We needed to be in touch with Morgan Stanley headquarters, but we were somewhere where our cell phones didn't work. So we pulled into these two filling stations across from each other, all these black limos, to use the phones. We called up Morgan Stanley, and they said, 'We're thinking of bringing it out at $31. I said, "No, let's keep it at $28, because I wanted people to remember it as a $20 stock, not a $30 stock, just in case it didn't go well. So then the next morning, I get on the conference call, and the thing opened at $71. It closed the day at $56, exactly twice the price I set. Netscape eventually fell victim to overwhelming and, the courts decided, monopolistic competitive pressure from Microsoft. Microsoft's decision to give away its browser, Internet Explorer, as part of its dominant Windows operating system, combined with its ability to throw more programmers at web browsing than Netscape, led to the increasing slippage of Netscape's market share. In the end, Netscape was sold for $10 billion to AOL, which never did much with it. But though Netscape may have been only a shooting star in commercial terms, what a star it was, and what a trail it left. "We were profitable almost from the start," said Barksdale. "Netscape was not a dot-com. We did not participate in the dot-com bubble. We started the dot-com bubble. And what a bubble it was." Netscape going public stimulated a lot of things, said Barksdale. The technologists loved the new technology things it could do, and the business people and regular folks got excited about how much money they could make. People saw all those young kids making money out of this and said, "If those young kids can do this and make all that money, I can too." Greed can be a bad thing. Folks thought they could make a lot of money without a lot of work. It certainly led to a degree of overinvestment, putting it mildly. Every sillier and sillier idea got funded. What was it that stimulated investors to believe that demand for internet usage and internet-related products would be infinite? The short answer is digitization. Once the PC Windows revolution demonstrated to everyone the value of being able to digitize information and manipulate it on computers and word processors, and once the browser brought the internet alive and made web pages sing and dance and display, everyone wanted everything digitized as much as possible so they could send it to someone else down the internet pipes. Thus began the digitization revolution. As investors watched this mad rush to digitize everything, they said to themselves, "Holy cow, if everyone wants all this stuff digitized and turned into bits transmitted over the internet, the demand for web service companies and the demand for fiber optic cables to handle all this digitized stuff around the world is going to be limitless. You cannot lose if you invest in this." And thus, the bubble was born.